Good morning and welcome to a live roundtable panel from the Linda. It is a great, great pleasure to welcome this audience. Let's hear the audience this morning. We have a very special roundtable panel this morning featuring an amazing guest. He is our soul. The question we had, the very existential question that we had earlier was, is it a panel when you just have one guest? We said yes, because it's going to be Alan, myself, and the amazing Malcolm Nance. So it is, for you at home, the one difference is that we are not going to be taking your letters today, so hold those for Monday, and we'll get to them. But we're going to have lots of questions from this incredible crowd, and we couldn't be more excited. In his new book, The Plot to Betray America, Malcolm Nance, the New York Times bestselling author, intelligence expert, and MSNBC contributor, reveals how President Trump and his inner circle conspired, coordinated, communicated, and eventually strategized to commit what Nance calls the greatest act of treachery in the history of the United States, compromising the presidential oath of office in exchange for power and personal enrichment. Malcolm Nance joins us. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Big Joe.
It is a great pleasure, and I hope you will join me in welcoming the man of the hour, Malcolm Nance. How are you?
I'm fine. This is humbling. It's like going back to high school or something. You know, especially because I live down the road in Hudson, New York, and every time I'm back for the round table, you know, I feel just this surprise. But then I realize, you guys do this every day. And for me, it's like once a quarter or, you know, once a year. So
yeah,
I'm
but
happy to be here.
We really like it when you're here because we get breakfast.
Sweet. There are perks.
There are absolute perks. So let me begin with this question as we start off the morning here. The plot to betray America.
Right.
Let us start at the baseline. For Malcolm Nance, given you're a spy, for goodness sakes.
I was.
What does the word betrayal mean? How do you define betrayal?
Well, in the context of this book, it is defined as turning the back or in abusing the power of the oath of office of the President of the United States. That is how it is technically seen, which is that the President of the United States swore an oath to protect, uphold, and defend the Constitution of the United States first, foremost, above all, and that vow has been broken. That the trust of that has been broken. And anybody, you know, the funny thing is that this is a pretty obvious thing for those of us who have our eyes open and who understand facts, as we call them. But we're living in a world where one third of this country just flat out refuses to believe anything about the President of the United States, about Donald Trump, that is negative. And it's very clear, as you'll see, as I outlined in the book, that right off the bat, he went on July 27, 2016, when he made his Russia, if you're listening speech, he knew what he was doing. He knew that when he opened his mouth and was going out there to publicly ask a foreign power to hack into a U.S. citizen's emails in order to engineer a result in an election, which, by the way, we all heard, right? I know I see it on video almost every day. There are people out there right now in this country who refuse to believe that that happened, even if you show them the video. So by doing that, Donald Trump had betrayed the oath of office and aligned himself publicly and openly with a foreign power.
You write midway through the book, there is a section, you start off the section, and the mischief begins, but to your point, you write, almost immediately after the election, Trump acted as though he was already in power. He and his emissaries seemed to believe they were the masters of the universe. This attitude led to a series of actions during the transition that undermined or worse, ignored the basic norms of American democracy. Additionally, during this period, as people initially resisted their actions and became cognizant of Russia's influence, the first calls for investigations started. He makes the point now, of course, that the Democrats, the left, has been out to get him from the very beginning. In what you, what I just read that you wrote, right, would indicate that we, the left, had every right to do so.
Well, absolutely. You know, I'm going to use a technical intelligence phrase to define how Donald Trump sees the world. And his worldview right now comes from the Fox News host and analyst, Greg Jarrett, who wrote a book called The Russia Hoax about a year after the election. And his thesis was...
Did your book sell more?
Yeah, as a matter of fact. Well, he made number one, but then again, at one
well,
point...
Well, then screw him.
Yeah. Well, you know, when they put two boxes at the front doors of Barnes & Noble, you know... And besides, those people who buy my book, I know you read them because you all write to me and tell me that you read them. You know, they buy them for totem purposes. They just put it on the shelf and worship them. But back to your point. Back to your point. It was very clear when I wrote my first book, Plot to Hack America, which came out 6 weeks before the election, that this was going to be the greatest scandal in American history. It was going to blow Watergate out of the water, to put it so to speak. But it had to, because what we were talking about, if you really care about the country, what we're talking about is someone who, before he even became president, was engineering the process, a win at all cost, you know, Constitution be damned attitude. And by win, you know, and now we're just now, even with the Mueller report, just finding out that these operations had started well before 2016, which means that there had to have been a strategy in place, even if that strategy was as simple as, I'm going to win, I don't care what it takes to win. But once they took over, and if you remember the transition, right after the election, just, you know, the day after the election and right up to the inauguration, they ignored the Obama administration's presence, which the law says there is only one administration at a time. And they just immediately started carrying out foreign policy. They started communicating with our enemies, as you might recall, Michael Flynn with his secret phone calls to the Russians, Jared Kushner's secret meeting with the Russians, where he asked for a secret Russian communication system so that he can talk where NSA and the CIA could not monitor him. All of these happened in the transition, and it was very clear that they were going to abuse power to the absolute limits because they adopted a masters of the universe attitude. They owned America, and they were going to push it as far as they could. And now we're seeing, 2 years later, that I was right.
So Betray is right. And the part of your book that I love the most was the quotation of the Declaration of Independence. And you know what the king had done. This is happening here, but the thing that I keep suggesting and people don't like is the idea that maybe there really was an agreement between Putin and this president, and that would be the ultimate betrayal and traitorousness.
And I go back over that for those of you who read my last book, The Plot to Destroy Democracy. My series of books came in this order. The first one was a very short intelligence analysis, as I saw it in July of 2016, of all of the machinations of Russian intelligence that had to exist for the WikiLeaks and Hillary Clinton emails to come out. And then I made a series of predictions at the end that there would be an FBI counterintelligence investigation, there would be a massive scandalous investigation of the president, and that President Obama needed to come out to the nation and announce that there was nefarious goings on. All of that happened. And then in Plot to Destroy Democracy, it's really about how Russia has a strategic plan to make Russia great again. And how do you make Russia great again? You tear the United States down. And it's just mind-boggling. I have people, I had this great online tiff with Glenn Greenwald, formerly good journalist, and who came out and actually wrote, said this on Twitter, when I was on television talking about Vladimir Putin. He said, you keep saying KGB. That organization ceased to exist 25 years ago. It's like, wait a minute. If I change the letter CIA to ABC, and the guy comes up and takes down the letters and puts up new letters, it doesn't cease to exist. We're not 6-month-olds, right? The world still carries on. And that is what you are seeing. You are watching the machinations of a dedicated former communist intelligence officer who is executing a Soviet-level plan, which was to tear down Western liberal democracies, which they tried for 70 years. Only now he realized that communism as an ideology wasn't going to do it. What was going to do it was money, more money than capitalists could get their hands on. And Russia has oil money. It has natural gas money. And he realized, as an ex-spy would, because he manipulated human beings, that there are people who will do things that will supersede loyalty to the flag and their countrymen if you put enough money on the table. And this book is the continuation of that, in that Donald Trump and his friends, and if you think about it, and I break out by using, there's over 700, I think, references in this book, because it's all factually based. What would it take for them to operate beyond the loyalty to the Constitution and to our flag? And if you look at Jeff Sessions, besides recusing himself very early on, you have to ask yourself, what would make him quit and join Team Trump and do all of the things that he did? Or William Barr, the Attorney General. And the only thing you can think of is...
Booze from the crowd, yes, go
ahead. Just a pot of money that's bigger than our country, that will personally enrich them. And this is what the plot to betray America is about. It's really about how all the other individuals were around Donald Trump and worked with him. And you, as you break them down, you can see who the key players were. Who were the henchmen, right? Who were the dirty tricks teams? Like Roger Stone's trial just started this week. And, you know, we've written everything that was alleged that he did in this book. As a matter of fact, this book goes right up to the Russian-Ukraine story, the Ukraine story. But if you read it carefully, you'll see that it ties completely into the Russian report, Mueller report.
I was going to say, because there's a section later in the book when you're writing about Barr and you're talking about his handling of the Mueller report.
Right.
If you just took out the words Mueller report and said the Ukraine matter, it's basically the same story.
Yeah, you know, and when Barr came up and sent out his letter where he said no collusion, no conspiracy, right, everything, no obstruction, I had been on MSNBC. I was on that morning, and I recall it was the Joy Reid show, and they said, well, what do you think about this? And I said, this had better be accurate, because when the report comes out, and if it's what I have been alleging that it is for 2 years, then William Barr will have carried out the greatest scandal in American history to cover up the greatest scandal in American history. 3, 2, 1. The Mueller report comes out, and what do we find out? Bill Barr covered up what is arguably the greatest scandal in American history by just saying, I shut it down. There is nothing for you to see here. And now we're finding out with the Ukraine scandal that the day after that the Mueller report came out and Mueller made his testimony, Trump again saw himself as immune to the Constitution, immune to the oath of office, immune to any accountability, because he owned the Attorney General, owned him, and that this Attorney General would cover for him. And the next day he comes out and he says he's going to muscle the Ukraine out of, you know, to get them to implicate his greatest challenger, Joe Biden, in exchange for defense aid that had already been allocated to him. It is straight up extortion and bribery. And the Constitution actually lists bribery in the Constitution as a high crime.
The name of the new book is The Plot to Betray America. It is by Malcolm Nance. We should note that Malcolm was so nice to give us the launch party for the book. The book does not officially come out till Tuesday. So if you want a copy, you got to wait till Tuesday. But we're so pleased that you are here and sharing it with our listeners this morning. I want to just quickly ask you a question about, because you were talking about the machinations. And I mean, this seems like this is a plot, and a plot indicates that there is real work and there's some smarts behind it. You quote Groucho Marx early in the book and say, he may talk like an idiot and look like an idiot, but don't let that fool you, he really is an idiot. So, who's the, if we assume in this case that Donald Trump is the idiot, yeah. then who's doing the work here?
Well, that's a really good quote, and it happens to be true. But who is, you know?
But idiots don't come up with plots like this.
There are motivations, and then there are strategies. With Donald Trump, he is motivated to do things. My good friend Tim O'Brien, Bloomberg News, who wrote the book Trump Nation, the first person to ever have Donald Trump deposed in a lawsuit. He says that Donald Trump is a minute-to-minute player, but he does have things that are stuck in his head. And the one thing that clearly has been stuck in his head, which I outline in great, horrifying detail over four chapters, is Trump Tower Moscow. Trump Tower Moscow did not begin in 2014 or 2013. He has been discussing that since 1988. And the funny thing is, while Donald Trump was discussing Trump Tower Moscow with the Soviet Union, when he actually flew there with his guest host, who is the head of Intrade, a KGB-run intelligence apparatus that brought all Westerners to Russia, Donald Trump had been under surveillance by Soviet intelligence since 1977, when he married his first wife, Ivana Trump. And in fact, Ivana Trump, little known fact, her father was the reporting intelligence officer or the reporting informant who reported daily to Czech intelligence, the STB, their intelligence agency. They were a direct subordinate agency of the KGB. So in fact, when Donald Trump started expressing an interest in 1987 and 88 to run for presidency, which would challenge George Herbert Walker Bush, who was the ex-director of the CIA and Ronald Reagan's vice president, the Russians suddenly took a great interest in getting Donald Trump to Moscow and talking to him about the Moscow Tower project. And so he flew to the Soviet Union, went there, was shepherded around, he was treated and feted by all of these communists and under the control of a KGB movement apparatus that surveilled everyone. But Trump had been surveilled for almost a decade. So Donald Trump, having Trump Tower Moscow in his head, when the Soviet Union collapsed, he went back and wanted Trump Tower Moscow again. And we find, just in the last year, we learned he was ready to offer Vladimir Putin a $50 million bribe by giving him a penthouse on top of this tower, which he estimated he would earn $2 to $3 billion profit. This thing was literally Ahab-like for Donald Trump. It was a white whale that he was obsessed over. And now, step back into the role of a spy master. I went to Vladimir Putin's house in Germany, his office, where he worked at.
Did he invite you?
No, not this time.
Okay.
But I invited myself, though.
All right.
Beautiful neighborhood.
We just have about a minute, but go ahead.
Okay, beautiful neighborhood in Dresden, Germany. He worked in a beautiful house, very nondescript office in the place where the composer Schumann lived right down the block and one block from a KGB torture center. When you sat in that room and you realize this is where this baby spy operated, and his job was to flip humans. This guy, when he goes and he becomes a billionaire leader of Russia, he brings all those skills to the street, and meeting a narcissistic, self-serving individual like Donald Trump would be his easiest asset to flip in this world.
Alan Chartok joins me this morning. Our guest is Malcolm Nance. The new book is The Plot to Betray America. It is out officially on Tuesday. It is the last one was a New York Times bestseller. We assume this one will be Do you like the cover?
Yeah, interesting.
Do you have to put him on there?
Yeah, but it's just the way he's looking at you. You realize that's a snaky dude.
I know, but this is sort of what wakes me up in the middle of the night, though, too. Yeah. All right. We're going to take a break when we come back. Alan's got questions, and then we're going to continue. We're also going to take your questions in the next half hour as well. If you're listening at home, please, we are not checking email this morning, but we will certainly welcome your emails on Monday. Again, it is live from the Linda, Malcolm Nance. We'll be back. Good morning. Welcome back to a live roundtable panel from the Linda before a live audience. I know they're live because they make this noise. Welcome to Joe and his train seals. we're talking to Malcolm Nance and the book A Plot to Betray America.
Malcolm, is the president being impeached for the right things?
Well, I think he's being impeached for one of the right things, and this one is just because the evidence is so clear. I mean, he asked for a quid pro quo, which is another, you know, he literally extorted the government of the Ukraine. He told them, you have $400 million of defense aid that you need for an in-your-face warfare that they are fighting with Russia right now. Missile systems, which could be very, very helpful in stopping Russian and separatist incursions. And he said, you won't get it unless you give me dirt on Joe Biden. They knew there was no dirt about Joe Biden. They asked for them to start an investigation and announce it publicly that Joe Biden's son was under an official Ukrainian government investigation by their crown prosecutor. So that's, he went to them and said, weapons for your attorney general to make a false announcement. And it appears they've been working on this for years. This was not new. This is well over a year and a half in the making. They knew they were going to have to do this at some point, and they were prepared for it.
Now, we see Mike Bloomberg potentially coming into the mix. What do you make of it?
No, I want to hear what you make of it. You're Alan Chartok. What do you make of that?
I think it's interesting.
by a round of applause, how many people are by applause like the idea of Mike Bloomberg entering the race? And how many people do not like the idea? So I mean, mixed at best, right, Alan?
Well, you know, I love our audience and. I know from whence they come.
Yeah, it certainly is a set.
Yeah. Well, the question here is who can win. Mm-hmm. That is the question. Now there are a lot of people who love Elizabeth Warren. She's my senator, and she kissed me. I can only say that the number one thing for me anyway would be that. I have to be very careful here, that there'd be an intelligent choice and that this doesn't come out badly. And so that's why the Bloomberg issue becomes very fascinating to me.
Well, you know, I watched the coverage on a Morning Joe this morning with great interest. Here's my problem with it. Why does a guy who has $52 billion think that he can just step up and buy this nomination? Just step in. We've had 24 other people. We are just starting to whittle down the field. And he was it Bloomberg who said if Elizabeth Warren becomes president, that maybe I've got that wrong. He had some harsh words about Elizabeth Warren and her financial plans. You know, we don't need somebody. Don't we already have a billionaire that stepped in, Steyer, who doesn't fund any liberal groups, who doesn't fund an alternative to Fox News? I mean, what are these guys doing? This is all vanity and ego to me.
He has positive views on climate change. He has positive views on guns. His record on policing is troublesome in the city of New York. There is still the age factor. He's 77 years old. And so you put all that together, and I don't know. You wonder if it's you use the word by the election, but
I think I understand where he's coming from. I think he's watched the movie The Justice League too much. Because you recall at the end of that movie, somebody, I think it's Aquaman, asked Bruce Wayne, he goes, "What exactly is your superpower?" And he says, "I'm rich." That's an attitude that I think if there's anything, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are showing there is a large segment of the Democratic base that are fed up with that, right? That the progressive base is really resurgent right now. But, you know, we also have a very hard center. We have a center that is the entirety of its collective base are African-American women and African-American men. Now, I'm a middle-aged African-American man, so you already know who my choice is, all right, which is Joe Biden, because we need to go back to stability. We need to maintain all of the systems that were put in place during the Obama years, which, you know, look, I have communist military health care, okay? I get everything paid forever, right? I pay no copays, nothing. So I love my health care system, but, you know, affecting that instantaneously after we just got 26 million people their health care, trying to jump to a Medicare for all, TRICARE for all, is going to be really hard, and it's going to be really expensive. And now it gives Trump the one cudgel to beat us over the head with. And then you have 23 other people splitting the vote right now and acting like they, you know, that if their candidate doesn't win, they're going to take their 3% and allow Trump to win again. We don't need that, and we don't need a billionaire to jump into the middle of this race to try to, I see it as stealing or buying an election, right? Let it play out the way it's playing out right now. We are getting good ideas. Let those ideas play. I don't want a guy to come in who hasn't gone through any of the debates and won't qualify for any of the debates.
Okay, so let's assume that Elizabeth Warren is the candidate.
Okay.
And runs against the president. You talked about that big middle, and I'm very worried about the middle. And I'm wondering, can she win?
You know, I got to tell you, this is my opinion, right? And we're all here for opinions. I think she has a very, very poor showing amongst the African-American base. But then again, you got to remember, the Democratic base supported Hillary Clinton in 2008, not Barack Obama. The African-American community was very wary of Barack Obama until it became clear that he was going to be solid, right? That he was going to maintain a sort of left-of-center positions. And, you know, we are a left-of-center coalition, and there has to be a coalition of Black, Latinx, women, LGBTQ. All of them have to come together. But we saw what happened in 2016 when one fraction of that was left out, the libertarian left, the Jill Stein supporters. It literally threw the election in some places, or the people who wrote in Bernie Sanders. We have got to consolidate. And if we don't, and if we have another one or two people jump into this, we're just going to get pummeled. I mean, the conservatives have a message. That message is, we are not them. And when you look at, you know, people who are on the liberal side, you see a messy process, which we call democracy. They don't particularly care about democracy, right? They fall in line, you know? So I'm very worried.
So if your candidate, your announced candidate, Joe Biden, does not get the nomination, you're not worried?
No, I'll vote for whoever.
Well,
glass,
we're not
cup
talking
of
about
soup. All right? Look, you got to understand, job one here is restoring the Constitution of the United States back to the position it was, the dignity of the United States. And it's been, we have no, we have, 244 years of norms have been ripped down.
So how come the 44? So how come the 44%? Yeah. Stays with them no matter what. What's that all about?
We talk about this a lot. Yes. You know, I think we agreed that the number was like crazy 25, right? 44 is the conservative allowance plus independents who are in his pocket. 36 to 39 is the hard core base. But when they do these polls, and they always ask the crazy question, like, if Donald Trump actually killed somebody on Fifth Avenue, would you have a problem with that? It's always 25 to 26%. So you're not getting those back. Nixon had 25% when he was impeached. Bush had 23% when he left office. Those people we're not even trying for. What we should be trying for is the 50% of the voting population that didn't even come to the polls.
Yeah, you bet.
And you've got to motivate them to understand, and I'm not speaking hyperbolically, right? And like some of your former panelists said, I am not a conspiracy theorist, right? Because now all of my conspiracies have been borne out into facts.
Who called you a conspiracy theorist?
All right. But
slip me a note during the break.
One of your newspaper writers here in Albany.
It wasn't us.
Called the entire. No, he was on the round table.
Oh, okay.
But called the entire Mueller report and everything I had written for 2 years a conspiracy theory. How's that working out for you? My point is this, right?
Oh, now I know who
we
it is.
We need. You know, it bugged me because I don't own an op-ed page, and it takes me like a year to write my book to get back at you. So, but we have to go back to establishing America as the bulwark of the defense of democracy in the world. We can't allow ourselves to blithely accept fascism and totalitarianism. And I wrote in Plot to Destroy Democracy that what I called what Putin was doing with the United States and Turkey and Saudi Arabia and all of these other countries is an axis of autocracies. And we are teetering on the edge of autocracy. And this election will be the single most defining election since the re-election, since George Washington was president, period. Done.
Malcolm Nance's new book is The Plot to Betray America, How Team Trump Embraced Our Enemies, Compromised Our Security, and How We Can Fix It. It is out officially on Tuesday from Hachette. We would also like to mention, not only are you so giving in having... with this event and giving us this event, but you are also helping another great cause. On Sunday, you are going to be doing a fundraiser for Warriors Haven Veterans Farmstead, and you're going to be at Club Helsinki in Hudson, New York for book launch party at 7 o'clock. Folks can find out more information by going to HelsinkiHudson.com. I think that is the name. Yes, it's HelsinkiHudson.com. And you can find out more about that. When we come back, we are going to go into the audience. They have questions. We'll go. And are you ready for the audience questions?
Sure, I love them.
Audience, are you ready for questions? We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to the roundtable and our live panel at the window with our special guest, Malcolm Nance. And a sold-out crowd on a cold and wintry Friday morning. But Miriam from Troy made it. She is here and has the first question.
Malcolm Nance, yeah. It's wonderful that you're here in person. But I would like to know, in a world where the Democrat candidate wins the presidency, what would you like to do? Head of the CIA? State Department?
That's a good question. You know, I am on the board of the International Spy Museum in Washington. And this, my daughter and I just came back from our annual William Webster Gala Award dinner, where we get all dressed up, and there were like five ex-directors of the CIA in there. And not to mention like a million other spies. No, I am not qualified to be the director of the CIA, but listen, Joe, if you're listening.
By the way, when do qualifications mean anything?
You know, I thought about that.
Just asking.
I thought about that. I could do any job, right, in the government. I mean, if I was a brain surgeon, I could
world
run houses.
World your lobster.
But nationally, there is an intelligence review board of professionals who actually help guide the intelligence process, and I could give some input to that.
Miriam, thank you very much for the first question. We go to Nick, who is just from outside Altamont. I don't know. They won't let you actually into Altamont?
I'm in the town of Knox, actually.
Oh, Knox. Excellent. And you have a question about his background.
I do. Yeah. Regarding the International Spy Museum specifically, I guess.
Yeah.
Dina Adams told me to say hi to you.
Hello, Dina, Chief of Archives.
Yes, she is.
Of all the exhibits.
Well, just by coincidence, she and I have been in a cooperative thing lately, which leads me to my question. The cooperative thing is we just are loaning the Parahawk from the James Bond film to the International Spy Museum. And I heard through Joe Donahue on your show that you were on the board like halfway through this process. So I mentioned your name to Dina, and she said to say hi to you. But anyway, long story. I'm sorry. The issue I want to know is, how did you engage with even becoming involved with the Spy Museum? And tell us a little bit about your espionage background.
Okay. Well, good question.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it.
Listen, oh, by the way, if I had known, I have patches for Dina. I have some material that needs to go down there.
Okay, we don't have to use the radio as like a messaging service, for God's sakes. You have a phone in your pocket. Use that. All right, let's go.
Old-timey social media.
Tell me about espionage.
My background, as most of you know, I was a Navy cryptologist, which is code breaker. I'm a cryptologic linguist, which means I am a person that when those codes are broken out, they all come out into a foreign language. I cannot tell you specifically what I did, but if you go see the movie Midway, or you watch the movie Tora, you can see Navy cryptologists in action 50 years ago, or 70 some odd years ago. So what I did was I did that job where I went to a lot of places and did a bunch of things because I spoke Arabic, and I was a little special because I was a black guy that spoke Arabic. So there were a lot of different agencies that needed black guys that could speak Arabic as opposed to guys from Brigham Young that could speak Arabic. And so I did that for 20 years, and then I was invited to the International Spy Museum because of my testimony before Congress on waterboarding. I operated the only authorized waterboard in the Department of Defense before it was stolen and reverse engineered into a CIA program. And I have great friends there, and it is the most fascinating museum you will ever go to.
Thank you very much, Nick, for the question. We go to Julie from Monterey. You have a great question.
Oh, thank you. Good morning. In his opening remarks for the Roger Stone trial, the prosecutor laid out his theory that Roger Stone was forced to lie because otherwise it would look very bad for Donald Trump. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that.
I think his actual...
Thank you.
I read that. And I think that what he was actually laying out... In his path to the prosecution was that Roger Stone chose to lie. He wasn't forced to lie. And you'll see in his testimony and his versus his emails, things he was saying on television, like I have immediate contact with Julian Assange, when in fact he would lie and he said it was Tancredo who had contact with him, and it was an entirely different person. He was lying to avoid implicating Team Trump. And we know that. That I've written extensively about it in this book, which is why his prosecution is going forward. He lied everywhere, but he's Roger Stone. This man has a tattoo of Nixon down the center of his back. I'm not joking. And it's a pretty good looking tattoo.
We go to Jeff.
Joe, if I can.
Yeah, go ahead.
If Trump, as he sort of alleges, owns the Justice Department, why do we see trials like this?
Interesting. I think that, I think there's just too many facts that were put out there. It was very clear that he perjured himself too many times. And if you were to suddenly erase this prosecution after almost 2 years of work, it would be very, if you're going to be evil, don't be in your face evil, right? You want to be subtly evil, you know, demonic, you know, James Bond villain evil, where you have a plan. So erasing Roger Stone's trial, which gives you a fall guy, right? You could say, I was never involved in any of that, even though he got prosecuted on perjury. That's Roger Stone. I had nothing to do with it. And Stone is the kind of guy that will not flip on Trump. It's the material that they seized with their SWAT raid, where they went through his emails and said, you wrote all this. Here's the lie you told the prosecutors. We're just going to nail you to the wall.
Jeff joins us from Poughkeepsie. Go, Jeff.
Wow. So the divisions run so deep in this country right now, and Trump didn't create it. What gives you hope?
Oh, jeez. Rosemary Romero keeps saying we're doomed. Do you think we're doomed?
No. I don't know if we're doomed, but I think we're coming to this existential choice, and I really think it's existential. There is an opportunity for our opponents to re-engineer America into a way that it hasn't been seen ever. And to be quite honest, they have more in common with the way that the Confederacy saw the United States, which was a system of government which was dominated by one tribe, right? And in this instance, it's the tribe is, you know, non-liberal thinking Caucasians, all right? And they are going to engineer all processes that will benefit them, as opposed to our national motto, E Pluribus Unum, from many, one. They do not want a diverse America. They do not want an America where immigration is celebrated unless it comes from Norway or, you know, all these other places. They'd be really surprised, by the way, some of the Norwegians that are out there. They don't believe in what we have been striving for, that the American project has formed for 244 years. This is a corruption. This is almost an insulting corruption of what America is. Whoever the key principal people that have informed Donald Trump, and now we're starting to find out that if you look at senators and you look at these crazy, crazy right-wing congressmen like Jim Jordan, who come out and spout off John Bircher-type conspiracy theories that are now all accepted as absolute part of their reality. They intend to shove that reality down the throat of 60% of the American public. They don't believe in, you know, our constitutional Republican system. And most of them don't know that the definition of the word republic means a democracy which protects the rights of the minority. That being the minority party. They don't care about that. That we are leaning in towards essentially a form of autocracy. And they like that idea. There was a woman who said earlier this year, that's famously on television, she said, I never thought I'd want a dictator, but if I have to have one, Donald Trump should be it.
Wow.
So, is there hope? Yes, there's hope. Because you, every person who is listening, is going to do something about this. This is the one election that you better bring five friends. And you better vote like your nation's security depends on it, because as I wrote in this book, your security's already been compromised. So you better reset this button or we're going to be in big trouble.
We have 3 minutes before the top of the hour. Sure. Sue has a question from Brett Hook. Sue, go ahead.
Thank you. A few years ago, I read a book by Bill Broda, The Red Notice.
Oh, Red Notice. Yeah,
right.
Bill Broda.
And as I was reading it and reading about the world oligarchs, I was trying to make a connection with Trump, and I still haven't been able to make that jump to figure out, is it that he wants to be part of that oligarch class? Is that what it's about?
Yes. And as a matter of fact, I write extensively about that, and I was joking with Alan that the second chapter of my book is called The Supervillain with a Leash, right? And the third chapter is Trump, the dog to be walked. There really is a global oligarchy, okay? I always do this experiment, okay? This is a relatively seasoned crowd. There is a small port in Spain called Puerto Banús. Has anybody ever heard of it? That's because you don't own a super yacht with a helicopter pad, okay? I came into it by complete accident on a Los Angeles class submarine who happened to be dropping me off. And I could not believe this place. The town of Marbella, where it's at, has BMW 7 class cars as their police cars and Mercedes-Benzes. There is parts of this world where money is above all nationality. Donald Trump met those people at the Nobu restaurant in 2014 in Moscow, the top 12 richest men in Russia. And when he walked out of there, he said, "We will have a Trump Tower in Moscow." He wants to be part of the globigarchy, as I call it. And they don't care for countries. They care for money.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We'll have our third act. Last call for questions in the audience. Our guest is Malcolm Nance. The new book is The Plot to Betray America. Welcome back to the Roundtable's live broadcast of the panel from the Linda before a live studio audience. Alan Chartok. And our special guest, Malcolm Nance, the new book, The Plot to Betray America. And we go to audience questions and continue those. What's your name, sir?
Gary.
Hi, Gary. Where are you from?
Scotia.
Excellent. How are things in Scotia?
Wonderful.
All right. What's your...
What? Scottish.
Scottish, yes. Of course. What's your question?
Well, my question is this. I'm thinking back to days when we learned in high school and college cause and effect. And I'm thinking to... the question that was brought up, or the comment that was brought up by David Brooks right after the election, when he described Trump as being the wrong answer to the right question. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm not talking about all these terrible things that he's been involved in. I'm talking about what were people thinking. And a lot of some of that may have been answered before with another question by another person. But where is it that there was a malaise or a dissatisfaction that people latched on to him? And you talked about the fear and the loss of things like that. But I'm wondering, you know, where was, because Brooks is a very thoughtful person, and what are your thoughts on that comment?
That's a really good question. And the question that I think that was being asked was, what will America be, right? And at the time, you have to understand, there was a lot of propaganda flying around. When I say that, here is the propaganda that I have watched for most of my lifetime. Hillary Clinton is a evil dot, dot, dot. Right? I've heard that since she was the first lady of the United States, wanted to do Hillary Care, which was essentially Medicare for all, right? If I'm not mistaken, some form of that. And then she got the CHIPS program, the Child Health Insurance Program, implemented. And the propaganda around her was enormous and nonstop for almost 30 years. And I had a debate with an FBI agent in Las Vegas. No, it wasn't Las Vegas. It was Salt Lake City. And he said, Hillary Clinton is a blah, blah, blah. And I said, my counterargument was, okay, wait a minute. Is the FBI the single worst investigative body in the history of the United States, in the history of the world? He goes, no. The FBI is the finest investigative body. I said, you could not get her for jaywalking over 30 years. And the only logic that I can apply to that is, perhaps she is really a nice person who was really looking out for things. Because you're telling me she engineered terrorist attacks and all these other horrible things, but you couldn't get her on anything. Perhaps the opposite is true. And I think that there is a class of people, and I've met these people, you know, they work for me or they're contractors or they're friends, who all said this: I don't like Donald Trump, but I couldn't vote for Hillary Clinton. Right? Which is interesting because she got 3 million more votes. But the Electoral College doesn't work that way, okay? We use a system that's pretty literally archaic, right? From the first, designed in 1783 to choose electors based on states, the number of electors in a state. Donald Trump peeled away 77,000 formerly union, white-collar, reliable Obama voters who were overwhelmingly non-college educated and white, just 77,000 of them, in three counties to win the Electoral College. That's it. And so I suspect that whole, to be quite honest, misogynistic attitude of anyone but that woman was the reason that we lost. I think, though, Donald Trump has taken the question to a completely different place. He's taken it from the premise, or what do we want to be? He has filled it with, this is what you are going to be. And you, that tribe that is only one-third of the United States, who is afraid that in 2050, 2045, you will become the minority population, the minority demographic of this world, I will make you the tribe that will dominate this nation, no matter what your size. And that very thought, okay, if you put it in context of race, is a white supremacist attitude. Now, I'm not saying that because I'm African-American. It's because as an intelligence professional, if I go to Rwanda, and I see you buying a million machetes to start killing all of your neighbors, I'm going to say that you are going to be genocidaires, right? It's just cause and effect, as you say. I call it like I see it. When I see someone promising that demographic that they will dominate and they will eliminate E Pluribus Unum from the entirety of the American experiment, okay? My job was to protect and defend this nation against all enemies, foreign and domestic. When I hear that, I see that we have a fundamental flaw happening in our national discussion. And of course, the only way to get that back on track is for people to go out and use the, you know, to use the franchise of voting to recalibrate this nation back to what it was supposed to be, which is a truly great, open, prosperous nation in which we love, admire, respect, and raise up our neighbors, no matter where they come from.
Oh, I love these.
Can I just say something really quick?
Yes.
That you had to applaud for that common sense tells you how bad things are.
It's that hope thing again, Malcolm. I have to say, I love these live events so much because we get to meet our listeners and see everybody. I can't tell you can't see this at home, of course, but I can't tell you how many people are in our audience taking notes as they have to remember how bad things are. But it's just so cool. It's the neatest thing.
Either that, Joe, or they're spies.
Yeah, or they're right, or they're taking their notes on Malcolm and us maybe. I want to introduce you to Evelyn. She is from the town of Esopus. Not only does she have a great question, a question ripped from today's headlines, but before we get to that question, please join me. Evelyn got fed up, decided she was going to run for town council in Esopus, and as of Tuesday, won.
Yay!
So we are very proud of you. Now, so congratulations. What is your question?
Thank you. My question to Malcolm is, last night I was watching Rachel, and I was getting angry because that she was reading.
Oh, I didn't ask you what party were you running on. just kidding.
Guess what? I was, you know, because this anonymous wrote this book, The Warning. First, the op-ed piece in the Times about how they were trying to steer Trump from destroying the country, and now how this warning comes out that we need to get rid of this guy, he needs to be impeached. But this person is still anonymous, and apparently there are a lot of anonymous people who are trying to do right, but how do you do right when you're doing wrong?
Yeah.
And then I just wanted to know what was your opinion on.
You know,
on
it reminds
anonymous.
Me of that video the internet where they have the three Nazis are all talking about these great things that you're going to do. And then the third Nazi, you know, he's talking about, yeah, we're going to genocide this and we're going to do that. And we're going to invade this country. And the third Nazi looks over and he goes, wait, are we the baddies? Who can remain in this administration? I have my brother chief here in the Navy here. We see things, we get upset, and we stand up and we say, well, nobody asked me, but here's exactly what I think. And that's all I've been doing on MSNBC for the last few years. When I'm not doing my terrorism stuff, all you are seeing me do is address the subjects that a lot of pundits and analysts give a lot of thought to, but there's an entire class of people who are apparently working for this administration who clearly have never seen Norman Rockwell's painting of Freedom of Speech, right? Which the first time I was brought before Congress to give to testify about waterboarding, I had written an article called "Waterboarding is Torture, Period," and it burned through the Pentagon. I was literally had the commandant of the Marine Corps call me and say, "Hey, you've changed things over here. Everyone's arguing about waterboarding," and the first thing that popped into my head is that picture where the guy is standing up, and he's got like, you know, a referendum or something in his pocket, and he's saying his piece. We have a party where the people are so afraid of each other and what they will do to each other and their reputations and their jobs and their standings that they won't stand up for the Constitution of the United States. I have zero tolerance for this, all right? Clearly, when I'm not in the secret world, I like to talk. So, by the way, this is what a secure room is like, right? We just can't say it outside the doors, right? We sit in there and we talk and give our opinion. But this book, Enough by Anonymous.
37 microphones.
Yeah, we have the microphones, believe me. But you have this book, Anonymous, by someone inside the Trump administration. He's not defending America. He's making money off of the salaciousness of the dirt that he saw. I would have, you know, and this is why I get mad at General Mattis. This is why I get mad at other people. Like I said, as a salty old Navy chief, we have this phrase, throw down your anchors, which means I take these little collar devices off that are anchors, and I throw them on the table, and it means I'm going to tell you precisely what's on the top of my head, right? So people ask me all the time. Jack Kingston, a former congressman who I met on Bill Maher, said, hey, we would like you to come. At one point, he said, we'd like you to come brief Donald Trump. He loved your book, Defeating ISIS. And I closed the door to the green room, and I said, are you out of your mind? I said, that man, you're going to let him have control of atomic weapons. I said, there is no way I will ever allow that to happen, and there's no way I will facilitate you doing this. Well, clearly, there's people out there writing whole books saying that, but won't put their name on it. Okay, what did Thomas Paine say, right? The Sunshine Patriot. Right, in the summer soldier. Oh no, you're not a Valley Forge, you know, denizen. You are a person that's looking out for your own wallet. You are not looking out for this nation.
You know, Malcolm,
sell a million books, though.
far be it from me, who respects you so much, to argue with you about anything.
No, go ahead. You do it every show.
I do. and yet, Malcolm. A whole bunch of people are either fired or quit and are out of there. And when they are, their input is diminished, right? You know, the fact that Mattis or anybody else who says anything. So now we get somebody who is allegedly, who, by the way, says he's giving the money to good causes, who knows, during this thing, who stays there. And in order to stay there, he's anonymous. Now, I don't know that I believe this, but I'm just making the argument.
Right. Well, you know, in my world, we do not like anonymous sources. I mean, we're spies. We steal information from other nations. When we have a spy in there, we actually make them sign contracts that they are going to, and we give them targets on what they're going to collect. So if I've got somebody out there, the first thing I think of in counterintelligence is, am I being played by the other side? Is this book designed to come out and we find out that it was Donald Trump Jr. punking the American public, right? I mean, he's got his book out this week too, Triggered. You know, you want to talk about a guy who's triggered. So, you know, but I really get concerned about these people, though. The op-ed seemed amazing on its face, because here we have 50%, 55% of the American public do not approve of Donald Trump, and I think the strongly is well into the high 40s.
And want him thrown out.
And want him thrown out of office, literally removed, constitutionally removed, through the process of impeachment. And we have these people hiding behind everything so that one op-ed out of 3 years of chaos, mayhem, and making Russia great again, we get amazed by it. And we go and we're going to throw $30 at it. I wouldn't give a dollar to that book. I would give 28 to this book, though, because at least I put my name on it. But more importantly, I got President Jedediah Bartlett to write the foreword, Martin Sheen, to write an incredible foreword where it talks about how we must come back and be that nation that values and loves America, not for the cheap flag or the B-2, you know, bomber flyover, but for the very fact that we have the right to drive through potholes and complain about it, right? We have the right to petition our government and know the people who are working there are loyal and ethical and will be held accountable. That does not seem to be operational anymore for the top tier of the executive. They are out of control. They are not accountable. They think that they own this country lock, stock, and barrel. And with that, I want to make one quick point. So a couple of years ago, or I should say earlier this year, I got into trouble because a few times I had made the equation that Donald Trump would exceed Benedict Arnold as the greatest traitor to this nation. Now, technically, he's not a traitor, which is why the title is Plot to Betray the America. But you know, Benedict Arnold fought for this nation fiercely in its first years before his wife got him and seduced him over to the dark side to fight for the British. Donald Trump hasn't even done that, right? He has never served this nation. He has only taken from this nation. And now we find he is obsequious, he is subservient, slavishly devoted to a foreign government for his own reelection, for his own personal benefit. And that offends me on every level. So read the section in here about Benedict Arnold. He comes off pretty good.
We're at the Linda before a live audience, our panel, last moments, and Elisa is here. She is from South Lee.
Hi there. Malcolm, I really appreciate everything you have to say, and I look forward to reading your book. I have a question. You mentioned that the African American coalition is largely a moderate bloc who wants to go back to stability. And I have a question about that because obviously we have problems with our democracy. We have problems with our republic that got us into this situation in the first place, or you know, contributed to where we are now.
Sure.
So I have a question about that. Like, why would we want to? Obviously, things need to change. And also, another question I have related to that is, aren't you worried about the fact that Joe Biden is having a hard time holding his own in the debates, and it looks to me like Trump will eat him for lunch when we get to that?
Well, you know, let me address that first point, that second point first. If Joe Biden is having a hard time, I love these things people are saying. It's like, oh, he talked about a record player, okay? Every person in this room knows what a record player is, yeah. Right? Every person in this room has dialed a rotary phone. Well, except my daughter. So for the most part, that is also a little bit appealing to his demographic, which votes. But I hear these people say, he stutters, he makes mistakes, he makes a gaffe. In the age of Trump, there is no such thing as a gaffe. Did Joe Biden lie 14,000 times in the last 3 years? Nope. I will take gaffes over pathological lying at any given time. And I mean, this is pathological lying. I mean, I go over that in a chapter about presidential character. And so the last part of your question, the first part of your question was about the African-American demographic. We seek that stability because, you know, my family has served in every war since the Civil War. I have a niece who's in the Navy right now, who is the most recent of all the Nances who fought in Yemen, off Yemen last year. She was in a battle off Yemen. We take the American experiment very seriously because we literally physically carried the American experiment on our back. All of the fundamental wealth of the United States in the South for 300 years came on the backs of slavery. As I like to say, we're not immigrants, we were hostages. So we take it very seriously, and we want this to succeed, right? And so we are willing to go with the person who is gonna win. I don't think Trump will eat Biden in the debates. I have a sneaky suspicion Trump won't come to the debates because he is that, he'll be down in the high 30s, and his impeachment will be over, and he will have been impeached but not removed. And all he's got to do is find a guy who's going to peel away 77,000 union voters, and the polls are bearing out that Joe Biden is that guy. I want to win. I'm not willing to risk democracy on any experiment other than the fundamental experiment that brought this nation to being.
The final chapter of the book is called Fixing a Fractured Democracy. You ask the question, how do we fix a broken nation? And so I want to ask you that question because, interestingly, you believe that it has the answer lies in Finland.
It's very true. There's a thing called the Finnish method.
I was surprised, too.
In the information warfare world, many nations were attacked by Russia, starting with Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Georgia, the Ukraine. That's Ukraine. I'm constantly chastised for using the definite article. But Finland has taken a novel approach about it. They created a national information hygiene program where they, with PSAs and brochures in elementary schools and high schools, are educating people to think critically about the source of information that you have. It would be very hard for us to do this unless you had a government that believed in public service announcements, right? I mean, right now, we literally have a state-run news media organization. So it's going to be hard, but we need to understand that you have to educate people. And I'm often asked, well, where do I get good, reliable news sources? BBC. If you don't believe, the 400, quote-unquote, fake news U.S. news organizations, go read the BBC. Go watch their analysis. It's pretty hard. You know why it's hard? Because they're telling you these fact things, right? And when you live in an isolated bubble of which you will only believe what Donald Trump told you to believe, because you guys remember the speech where Trump said, only believe what I say to you. Don't watch the videos because they manipulate them. I never said that, the whole, Access Hollywood thing denied everything he's ever said. And you guys talk about Joe Biden mentioning record players. This guy has got some form of dementia. He has to. And now we're finding out from this book by Anonymous that half of the White House staff believe the same thing. So get your information sources that are legitimate. Hold on to them. Democracy dies in darkness, as the Washington Post says. So if Donald Trump is, canceling his subscription, that's a pretty good reason for you to subscribe.
So the question is, how do we fix our democracy? Let me follow it up with the second question, which is, how long will that take? I mean, I've heard various. I have great respect for David Gergen, who was on CNN a couple of nights ago, and saying it's going to be generations before we can fix this.
Well, I don't think it'll take generations. It'll take generations if we want to do this slow, plodding, incremental, let me try to, deprogram my grandpa sort of thing. No, I think that whoever the nominee is for the Democrats, and I'm going with Democrats. By the way, a lot of people don't realize that I was conservative most of my career in the military. I was a registered Republican because when I went to boot camp, they said, mark right here, everybody in the military is Republican. It's not true. That's not a joke. That I was literally a registered Republican until the impeachment of Bill Clinton, when I started actually listening to what the Republican Party was saying. And I thought, I'm not with these guys. So I chose, through logic and listening and learning and educating myself, the people that are like me. And you're all in this room right now. So that being said, How do we restore our democracy? Will it take forever? No. I think the next presidential nominee should say this, and I hope you're listening, Joe, or Elizabeth, or whoever else. We are going to do a Marshall Plan for the restoration of the founding principles of America. We are going to educate all of you. I'm going to take $1 billion and drop it at the Schoolhouse Rock, right? All those videos are going to be showing on TV all day long. We have to, people need to understand that when NPR reads the Declaration of Independence on July 4th, and this actually happened, it was not a series of liberal talking points in the impeachment of Donald Trump. And there were people that actually complained that the articles of indictment against King George III, that they were talking about Trump. It just seems like it's Trump because he's King George IV. So, you know, when a tyrant sees tyrant, you know, game knows game.
It's been a very, very special morning. I just want to thank on behalf of Alan and myself, we just want to thank a whole crew of people who made this event happen. We have wonderful volunteers. We always have great volunteers who come and help us out. Karen Covert-Jones, Walt Jones, Leslie Sikora, and Tom Swick all were here bright and early to help us out. Our wonderful staff, Amber Sickles, Woody Woodworth, Kayleen White, all helping. We want to thank Healthy Cafe Catering for the amazing food, Bat and Kill Books, for the books that you hold in your hand. Also to our amazing team of engineers, Rob Chacon, Mike Bowen, and Carl Blackwood back at home base, and Matt Plummer and Nate Scheid here. Of course, to our fantastic producer, Sarah LaDuke, a big hand for all of them this morning. Of course, we want to thank the audience too. We was I think right in the middle of our lockbox, and we had Malcolm on the show, and Malcolm said, "I'd love to give you something," and gave us this incredible gift. We opened up the phone lines, and we sold this out within I think an hour and a half, and it's absolutely amazing. So to each and every one of you who acted quickly, thank you so much for being a part of our family and for being here and for coming out and for selling this place out. It's really beautiful to have you all here this morning. To all the people that are home listening who tried to get a ticket and couldn't and wrote us mean letters, we forgive you. We also want to remind you that not only has Malcolm been incredibly giving to this event, but he also is going to be doing a book launch party. Again, the book comes out on Tuesday, but you'll have an opportunity to get it on Sunday as well. It's a very, very cool event at Club Helsinki and at Helsinki Hudson. A book launch party, it's at 7 o'clock, doors open at 5, the event's at 7, with the proceeds going to Warriors Haven Veterans Farmstead, which, tell us just a little bit about.
Yeah, Warriors Haven is a farm training program we're establishing in Stockport, New York, right outside Hudson, and it's designed to give modern war veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan the skills to run their own farm. So all the proceeds from this Club Helsinki event, if you couldn't make it today, here's your last chance before I go on a national book tour. It will all go to Warriors Haven.
HelsinkiHudson.com. Finally, I do hope you will join me. It is an incredible gift. We, you know, Malcolm Nance is on MSNBC, and he is all over the place. So I'm sure he'll be on Bill Maher and all of the shows. He's going to be going across this country. But whenever we call him up and we ask him for something, he's always there. He is an amazing gift to us. Not to be too crass, but you made us some money. Just from the bottom of our hearts, thank you so very, very much.
My pleasure.
The new book is Malcolm Nance, The Plot to Betray America. Alan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Joe. Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Have a beautiful weekend. Thank you.